the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue.
Liberty Blue.
Rangers Podcast.
Rangers Podcast.
With Andrew Shelby.
Andrew Shelby.
And Nick Zeraris.
Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, they played pretty poorly against Winnipeg, but they bounced back with two monster wins against Boston and the Panthers. Overall, they're one of the best teams in the NHL standings-wise, and they keep proving it on the ice as well.
The Florida game is about all you need. At this point in the season, you're not going to be able to glean a whole lot about the team from any one given game. That's just the nature of how a long season. One game doesn't mean a whole lot. So the big thing for me over the last, I'd say, 2-3 weeks has been, how do they respond to difficult situations? You know, because that's generally the barometer of a team that's going to be able to do well in the postseason, because the highs and lows of a long regular season, they're really amplified in that short span. You know, I always talk about 7 games over 14 days, if you're lucky. And that's if you get a day off after every game and there aren't back-to-backs, which with the Rangers and their building, there is no guarantee that you won't have at least every game with one day off afterwards. But it would have been very easy for that game Saturday night to get out of hand at 2-0 at the point in the game they were at. They drew a power play. Fox had one of his better games. I know that sounds a little ridiculous to say considering every game he basically plays like that, but swung them the game. I was watching the game with a couple of my friends, and I turned to my one friend and I tapped him. I said, all right, that's going to calm the game down a little bit at 2-1. Florida's going to be a little bit more reserved, but that was a classic split decision, 10-9, 11-10, however you like to see it. The Rangers hung in there with Florida. I know Florida's missing guys. Rangers are missing guys too. You can only play who's in front of you. They played a pretty strong game. All things considered, at this point in the season, it's a matter of staying as healthy as you can and getting to April 18th, 19th, whatever the first day of the playoffs is.
That and Peter Laviolette scratched Will Cooley on Saturdays. By the lines, it kind of looks like Kako is going to be the odd man out against the Flyers. And the one thing, there's a lot of different ways that we can approach this, but the one thing that I really like about Peter Laviolette is his transparency with these kinds of things. Whereas it's very clear that, okay, I scratched Will Cooley because I want him fresh for the playoffs. It wasn't a performance thing. It wasn't I like this guy, so we're going to play him and Will Cooley's going to sit up in the press box for a game. It's no, this is the plan and this is how it's going to go. It's, you know, there's no secret. I mean, within reason, there's no secrets here. This is the plan that I have put in place and this is how we're going to approach these things. Like, that's fine. And I would, if you would tell me Will Cooley is going to be scratched, but you won't tell me a reason, then I would get a lot more defensive. It's like, oh, well, why are you scratching Will Cooley? He's been great all season. What's the point here? But because Peter Laviolette was so upfront about, hey, this is literally just to not have him be exhausted come playoff time, set him for a game. We're going to be rotating guys in and out of the lineup these next couple of weeks. I'm totally cool with it. Like, just because of the explanation given, because there's a clear plan and it wasn't just a spur of the moment, hey, this guy is a Weenie Hut Jr., I don't like him, I'm going to sit him for a game. Like, I'm totally cool with this rotating, you know, revolving door of guys that are just going to sit for a game. And yeah, like you said, the Panthers game could have gone really bad really quickly, especially when it became 2-0. Very early on, and the broadcast was talking about it for a good amount of time with that Gustafson pinch that he didn't get puck, he didn't get body, he didn't really get anything, and that led to a 2-on-1 and they scored. Then that game really could have gotten out of hand. But the Rangers found a way. They got one, then they got the second right after that. Panarin is a magician, a great pass that led to the goal. And now all of a sudden it's 2-2, and now it's a track meet. Now it's, you know, now we're going back and forth. It's kind of a weird game where, like, there was nothing going on for like 8 minutes, and then for the next three, there would be nine different scoring chances across both teams. It was a strange game. But overall, they played a great game, and I like the strategy that Peter Laviolette's using. But more importantly, I like that he's being transparent with us about it and not just talking down to us because he thinks that, you know, he's smarter than us.
So two things. I went and wrote it down because I think this is a good illustration of the difference between the game against Florida and the one they lost to Tampa Bay 2 weeks ago on the Thursday night. So in that game against Tampa Bay, the bottom six, so the third and fourth lines, gave you effectively nothing at 5-on-5. No, basically close to zero. I want to say 0.3, 0.4 expected goals each line, just expected goals. Then on Saturday night against Florida, VZ, Gaudreau, Rempe, 72% of the scoring chances, 80% of the expected goals, 100% of the high danger. They only played 6.5 minutes, but those are the numbers they had in that ice time. Brodzinski, Wenberg, Kako, 64% of the scoring chances, 55% of the expected goals, and then neither team had a high danger chance when those groups were on the ice. That was effectively the difference in that game. The bottom six was able to control the game for stretches of time. I know at the start of the third period, the Panthers went a good 8 or 9 minutes without a scoring chance a shot on goal, not a scoring chance, because the Rangers are doing a pretty good job of clogging it up. And the Rangers in this stretch, and we're going to talk a little bit about their defense with and without Trouba and some of the underlying numbers, the biggest difference in the last few weeks as far as defense, the Rangers are playing less of it. It is not that they are playing superb defense, that they're not conceding looks against. It's they are in the offensive zone for prolonged stretches of time, so they don't have to worry about playing defense. And yeah, there's going to be volatile swings like that. You mentioned the Gustafsson pinch. We know that Keandre Miller, that Trouba, that Fox are liable to making that overly aggressive pinch because they're active in the offensive zone. They're trying to manipulate that numbers advantage to playing that extra defenseman as effectively a fourth forward. So schematically, you're going to have to take chances, and you're okay with that based on how the last few weeks would go. And I wrote this down in my notes as far as the Brodzinski, Rempe, Cooley musical chairs. If it's genuinely about workload that they want to get everybody in, that's fine. But I take that slightly with a grain of salt, because you're not going to tell me that Rempe, who played 5.5 minutes, is getting the same exact amount of minutes that Will Cooley would have gotten if he was in the game. That's the only reason I take that caveat with a slight grain of salt, that they're going out of their way to get Rempe in the lineup. Because if they wanted to play Rempe more, he would play more than 5.5, 6 minutes a game, because we've said this for 3 weeks now. When that line is on the ice, even with Gaudreau, they are generating offense. They need to, it sounds ridiculous to say about a 21-year-old who's playing 6 minutes a game, but they got to take the training wheels off, man. If he's going to play in the playoffs, he can't only play 6-7 minutes a game. It's just not fair to everybody else.
I agree. And that's one of the things that we go back to, is if you want him to play in the playoffs, how would you trust him then if you don't trust him now?
Yeah.
You have to see how he performs when you give him 11, 12, 13 minutes of ice time, and leave him out there for a shift against the other team's second line. I don't know. Just see how he reacts.
Dip your toe
things.
In the water.
Just to see, because again, like, if you are so, if you are, you know, if you want to trust him, if you want to see, okay, let's say it's game six of the semifinals, for example, and you need Rempe out there on the ice, you need to be able to trust him in those situations. Well, how would you know to trust him then if you don't trust him to play now? These 6, 6.5 minutes, they're great and everything. And like you said, it's not like he's just out there to do cardio. Like, he's actually doing positive things for the team when he's out there on the ice, on top of obviously the fans loving every second of his ice time. But like, this is the perfect time to just see what he can do. This is it. Like, the team is the team is, you know, tops of the NHL. They're not going anywhere. If you want to argue that they're fighting for points, you know, for the President's Trophy or top of the East, top of the Metro, whatever, like, that's one thing. But you still need to see what you have in Rempe if you want to avoid Stu Bickle's situation. You have to play him now. This is the time where, yeah, obviously you want to win. What do they have? 11 games left. You want to win them all. Sure. You want to win, you know, it's don't sit everybody and just play the Harvard Wolfpack for 11 games. Don't do that. But like come playoff time, you have 12 forwards that are playing in a game. You have to be able to trust all of them. How can you trust Matt Rempe in the playoffs if you don't give him the runway to prove himself now?
That's really all it is. I would like to see more of the kid. And I don't think that's an outrageous ask, being that when he's played, he's been effective. He's done more than, frankly, anybody expected him to as a hockey player, not just as a presence and, you know, a personality. But at some point, the bench gets shorter. You don't want to have to shorten the bench in the first round of the playoffs. And I think that's more of a, I don't have enough of a sample size, as opposed to the kid isn't good. When he's played, he's been effective. But they do need to ramp that up. And one more thought on the Florida game before we move on. I think something that I've tried to do a little bit better this season in watching games and trying not to interconnect them one after the other, even though that's generally how we like to look at things in blocks of 5 or 10 games. You got to think of these games as sequences of small runs. You know, at 2-0, that game was, I won't say it was getting away from them, but it was in danger of getting away from them. And they tamped the game down. They slowed it down. They drew a penalty. They got to the power play. And those small individual sequences, that's something I think that speaks very well to something. And I'll tie it back to something that I wanted. Kreider or Trocheck said it after the Stadium Series game, that they never feel like they're out of a game because of the confidence they have in their group. And we've talked about the pros and cons of that mindset, where that can be dangerous because if you get too far behind too early, you still feel like you can dig out of the hole, you start making mistakes, etc. But in terms of one play at a time, one sequence at a time, the Rangers have enough talent where on any given night against 25, 26 of the 32 teams in the league, their guys can do that. They can chip away one play at a time and slowly swing the game back in their favor. They have done a really strong job of that. You know, Saturday night, they mentioned this on the broadcast, the first time they came back from a 2-goal deficit and ended up winning the game. And they have the second most come from behind wins of any team in the league this year. I think that's a testament to that they have found a way to kind of block out some of the negativity, block out some of the, you know, the short memory idea that just because we made a mistake just behind, we're behind in the game. Okay. We can still find a way to get back in this game. And then once you get back in this game, anything can happen. You said it before. At 2-1, okay, the game slows down a little bit. Then Panarin makes a crazy play and you get to 2-2. Then Carter Verhaeghe scores that goal because Schneider and Miller don't pass off Verhaeghe one to the other correctly. And even at that point, you know, okay, we can get one more. We've controlled play for a good 7-8 minutes here. That's something I think that they've done a really good job of. And once we start talking about the defense, I've got some good stuff on that. I think the vision is starting to kind of calcify. You can see things are coming together. We haven't even really talked about them beating up on the Bruins. I mean,
yeah,
the Bruins aren't great. I think their record is very misleading. When you watch them play, they're not amazing. They have a couple nice players, individual players, but other than the goalies, Marchand, Pasternak, you know, McAvoy, no one on that team is really, you know, that's 4 or 5 guys, and the two goalies can't play at the same time. So objectively, when you look at this Rangers team, there's still a little room to get better. And they're showing you improvement week to week, month to month.
That, and it's very fun to watch how they continue to show not only to the rest of the NHL, but to themselves that they're one of the best teams in the league. You go into Boston, and yeah, I mean, Boston's cooled off, and as you said, they're maybe not the scariest team on paper and all these things, but at the end of the day, they're still one of the best teams in the NHL. They still have some of the best players in the league. They still have, you know, such a home ice advantage. Like TD Garden for the first half of the year or something like that, like nobody beat them at TD Garden. Like it was crazy. And the Rangers, I think, swept this, like they swept the season series against them. Like Boston hasn't beaten the Rangers this year, I'm pretty sure. I think the record is 3-0. Like the Rangers continue to show that they are the better team in this situation.
Yeah, 3-0.
they beat Boston, they beat Florida, and I was at that Winnipeg game, and the stat, like, they didn't, for like 58 minutes out of that game, it was all Winnipeg. Like, I understand, like if you want to get in the weeds a little bit, am I exaggerating? A little bit, you can say that, but Winnipeg really played better than the Rangers. Like, Kreider had a miserable game, especially after that third Winnipeg goal. He just kind of stood there. I think it was Scheifele who got the breakaway. I don't know what he was doing on that play. But overall, you can play the team in front of you, sure, but it is a continuing measuring stick to be like, okay, we didn't play that well against Winnipeg. Now we're going to go to Boston, a team that usually takes home 2 points at home, and we took home 2 points. Now we're gonna go back home, play Florida, another top team. Oh, and guess what? We're gonna get 2 more points out of them because we are a good team. We're gonna show to everybody that we are a good team. And I understand, at this point of the season, it's March 25th. Teams know who's good and who's not good at this stage of the season. But it's still really good to show other people, but also yourself, that hey, we're going to be fighting against the Panthers, the Bruins in the playoffs, and Winnipeg if it gets there. And not only can we hang with them, we just beat both of them. Like, we're right there with them. And that's a really good mental advantage to have. Even if you want to talk about the intangibles and how you can, hashtag grit, whatever, like, that's still good to have in your back pocket, that you can say to yourself, these are the teams that we have to be scared about. Oh, we just beat them. Like, we're good. We're a solid team, and we could beat anybody on any given night. And mentally, that's important.
The one thing I will say about the Winnipeg game, every now and then you're going to get goalied.
Yeah, Connor Hellebuyck was great.
The Rangers didn't play an amazing game, but that's, that's one of those games where every now and then you have, as a team like the Rangers, that kind of rides the shooting percentage and the save percentage. If the other goalie just gives up one fewer, because they had the empty net goal at the end there, 3-2 against the best goalie in the league, and you controlled play for decent swaths of it, even though the Jets definitely had a more share of overall possession at 5-on-5 for the game itself. The Rangers had a couple power plays weren't able to convert on. We talked about the stat 2 weeks ago where the Rangers record in games where they either get above average goaltending or a power play goal. Sometimes you're not going to get all the bounces. The Winnipeg game, I can live with. Winnipeg's a good team, even though, they lost to the Islanders, who ran Hellebuyck from the game on Saturday, which was weird. But as far as...
when it gets shut up on New Jersey last night, that was, I don't know
hockey's
what's
weird.
Going on with them.
The Islanders are very weird, and we'll talk more about the percentages, who's likely to play who. But I went and pulled the numbers for the the Rangers have played 11 games this year without Trouba. He got suspended for 2, and he's missed 9 since, I want to say, March 5th or 6th, when he suffered the lower body injury, that we are indeterminate. I know the Rangers are optimistic he will return probably after this road trip, the one where they swing out west to Colorado. They're pretty optimistic he'll be back. So in the first batch, the 2-game suspension, the Rangers outscored opponents 9-3. They were outchanced 92-108. They were out expected goals 345-503. 17 high danger chances for, 22 against, 9.63 save percentage. One of those games was against Colorado, which, they played pretty well. They won that game in overtime. And then in this swath here, this 9-game pocket since he got injured, 34 goals for, 22 against, 449 scoring chances for, 392 against. 17 expected goals for, 16.5 expected goals against, 73 high danger chances for, 70 high danger chances against, 9.27 save percentage. So my theory and my working theory for this as to why the Rangers have played better defensively, and I think the stat that gives it away is the save percentage. All those numbers are at 5-on-5. The 4% lower than what it was during that 2-game stretch. I really do think the big difference with Trouba out of the lineup is there's less risk-taking. We talk a lot about Trouba being a volatile, risk-taking player where he likes to step up. He likes to try and make that step-up play in the neutral zone, but it's a risky play. If you miss, the other team gets a 2-on-1 pretty much guaranteed. And in my opinion, when he comes back, they need to consider I don't want to say, I know they're not going to bump him down in the lineup. I know they're not going to break up the pairs that once everyone's healthy. But as far as conceptually, I think there's a real argument that they need to alter how they want to play that neutral zone, especially when he's on the ice, because it's working. When without that high leverage play, that risky play in the neutral zone, they are conceding a lot less. They are playing stronger through the neutral zone. And for 3 years, that's been one of my strongest, biggest gripes about this team. They don't control the neutral zone enough. They rely on quick breakouts, transition play to get to offense. And it's hard to do that in the playoffs. We talk a lot that in the playoffs, it ultimately comes down to what you can fall back on and repeat over and over and over again and wear the other team out. It's really hard to do that when it's the one big play. So when Trouba comes back, getting it through his thick skull, you know, he's taking fewer shots than ever. That's a positive.
That's great. The problem isn't the shots, the number of shots. It's the fact that they end up in the fourth row every
time.
But
he's taking fewer. So, like, yeah, there's a clear understanding that, hey, okay, maybe that's not my shot. You know, like the Patrick Ewing quote, is that your shot? Do you work on that shot? When do you practice that shot? You know, the Rangers clearly did that with Trouba this year because he's shooting fewer scoring attempts than ever. And it's something as a team the Rangers are really good about, that they don't waste possession with low quality shots from their defensemen. You know, other than Fox, I don't really want anyone else shooting. Like, I'll just be honest with you. I would always rather a forward taking the shot than a defenseman. They got through on that level. Now, if we can get through to Trouba in the neutral zone and we can get him to say, maybe I take half a step back as opposed to half a step forward, then we're really cooking. Because not only then are we playing less overall defense, we're playing more effective defense too. And that's kind of the barrier here. That's what separates the Rangers from me putting them in that tier, you know, with Dallas, with Colorado. It's those teams are actively good at defense and they're really good at controlling play in the offensive zone. If the Rangers can activate their defense a little bit more and actively play good defense and control the puck, then we're talking about a bona fide contender.
I agree with everything you're saying. The problem is that NHL coaches rarely make that kind of adjustment with 11 games left in the season. And I understand, like, Trouba is...
Well, it's more of a tendency thing than a
right,
schematic
thing. But even then, when you get to the... When you get this close to the playoffs, the idea is that, you know, you're gonna make tweaks and adjustments, sure, but you are fundamentally going to be playing this, for the most part, the same way that you have been playing, that you've been tweaking to this point to get to where we are today. So my only pushback is, you're right, and I would love for this to happen, but I don't think Peter Laviolette is going to do that with Trouba because of how, for some reason, how much they value 79 and 8 as a pairing, even though it hasn't worked together. Like, if they haven't even, you know, moved that, if they haven't even broken up that pairing despite their struggles for multiple seasons. And yeah, like, it's great that he's shooting less, but I just don't know if they're going to make that change with Trouba, because that essentially fundamentally changes the way he plays the game. And that's a lot to ask of someone this close to the playoff time to make that kind of adjustment. I'm not saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying it's a bad decision. It could be great, and by all accounts, like, at least on paper, it would end up, you know, it would be great. But I don't know if logistically the Rangers are going to do that because of how much they value that part of Trouba's game, even if it leads to more scoring chances against, even if it leads to the other team potentially going on more odd man rushes. Clearly the Rangers value that part of Trouba's game, because if they didn't, they would have, I hopefully would have changed it a long time ago.
So one thing, I was doing research for something about Schneider that someone's editing for me and I'll publish during the week. I found interesting that Schneider's been a lot better this year, and a lot of it isn't that he's playing better defense, because he's not. It's that they're playing more offense. And that's kind of been the barrier for the Rangers the last few years, is They have individually talented defensemen. You know, 1 through 6, when everybody's healthy, it's a top 10, 11 group in the entire league. I don't think that's too much of a stretch to say. But the issue has always been that the pieces aren't perfectly aligned, that they don't complement each other's skill sets. But one thing that's allowed Schneider to take a step forward is he's playing with somebody who's actually good at handling the puck in Gustafson. And yeah, Gustafson makes his fair share of mistakes. He's not great.
Hopefully he's okay, by the way. Like, yeah, that looked like a scary, scary hit. Hopefully he's all right.
Yeah,
also, an accident. Like, clearly that wasn't done on purpose.
No, that was that game was very weird from an energy perspective, because out of the gate, it was a little bit hot. Then it cooled down, and then as the game went along, it kind of heated back up again. But as far as the defense, that's my apprehension here. Because I think forward group-wise, the way they're playing the last 2-3 weeks, I think that's more than enough proof of concept that the forwards are fine. You know, you would like more from Zibanejad, Kreider, Roslovic, but in my mind, I've effectively deemed that the second line in my head, and it sounds a little worse. It sounds a little bit less worse, I should say, that Zibanejad is the second line center playing like this, Kreider's the second line left wing. And you should do that, in all honesty, because Trocheck plays more minutes per game. They get more usage and they do more. So in your head, if you take that alignment, the forwards, I think, are fine. You know, they have 13 forwards they feel good about, and there's no dead weight. You know, all right, I shouldn't say that. Well, other than Gaudreau, there's no dead weight, and Gaudreau's not coming out of
the
lineup.
So when is he coming out for that game? When is that happening?
If this were a true meritocracy, he would be out every now and then, and they would alternate who comes out. Everybody
he's got one goal, by the way, and they mentioned the broadcast. I think it happened in November. I don't know if you know this thing. It's almost April.
Yeah. Other than Gaudreau, who's not coming out of the lineup, so it's not worth discussing, they don't have any dead weight at forward, and they've been able to mask Gaudreau's faults by playing him in sparing usage and in certain roles. Unlocking this next tier of the defense, where it's not just being good at controlling the puck in the offensive zone, and then it gets a little helter-skelter as they backtrack to play defense, that's the key for me, for the Rangers to go to that next tier. It's not just we have a great goalie and we don't concede a lot because we're playing good offense. It's we are not playing defense. And when we have to play defense, we are shutting down looks before they happen. Because, you know, I just mentioned it. You know, the play where Verhaeghe scores, Schneider and Miller both look at each other and then look back at Verhaeghe, and neither of them takes a step. In the playoffs, and I know this is the pinnacle of small sample because I'm talking about one sequence in a game the Rangers won. In the playoffs, little mistakes get amplified. The games I point out this year as far as like the worst case scenario, the Carolina game, the Vancouver game, both at MSG, where every little mistake ended up in the back of the Rangers net.
The Vegas game as well.
The Vegas game in particular as well. That's another one to mention. They have played pretty well over the last 2 weeks. Now, changing up gears here, something I wanted to bring up with you.
Oh, and real quick, I saw this after the Florida game. The Vegas, funny enough, is the only team the Rangers haven't beaten this year.
Yeah.
They've beaten everybody else.
Yeah, because Florida was their first.
They're 0-2 against Vegas, and both games weren't exactly great.
Vegas is a more talented team. I have no qualms about saying that. Vegas, especially now, if everyone's healthy and you add Noah Hanifin and Tomas Hertl to the teams that already beat the Rangers, Vegas is a more talented team. The only difference maker you're going to have, if that were the Cup final, is you like Shesterkin more than Aiden Hill.
Oh, yeah.
And you hope the fourth line and the third line can play Vegas to a push. But other than that, Vegas is a more talented team. You know, if you can keep it close, things can happen. So this is two separate things I looked up. Number one, in your mind, do you think home ice matters?
Yeah.
As far as the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely not the end all be all, as we've seen over the course of, 100 plus seasons and throughout regular seasons, that some teams are really good away and some teams are really bad away. Some teams are really good at home. Some teams are really bad at home for some reason. Like they're very, hockey is a very strange sport on multiple levels. And home ice, if you can make your arena really difficult to play in, it really amplifies the advantage that you have. If let's say throughout the regular season you were dominant at home and then you get home ice advantage, it's massive. But if you're kind of middle of the road, or, you know, maybe equally as good at home as you were on the road, and you don't get home ice advantage, then maybe it's not that big of a deal, because you've proven to yourself and to everybody else that it doesn't matter where you play, you're going to play the same exact way. So I think it depends on the team more than anything else. But for the most part, I mean, it's not nothing for sure.
So I went and did the math. Over the last six seasons, that includes the one bubble season in 2020 where there were technically home teams, but, you know, not actually home teams. 42% of the time, the team without home ice has won the series. So 58-42, feasible. Not a huge gap between one or the other, but I do think that's worth mentioning. And then the other thing I pulled, so this is hockeyviz.com's. Money Puck's a little bit different. The Athletics model's a little bit different. But right now, as we sit here before tonight's games, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. The Rangers play the Flyers 32% of the time. The Capitals 24% of the time. Tampa Bay 18% of the time. Detroit 13%. The Islanders 6%. The Leafs 4%. The Devils 2%. Pittsburgh 1% of the time. The other thing I want to mention, right now, the Rangers and Hurricanes are on pace to finish with the exact same amount of points, 113. If they were to finish with the exact same record, I believe on tiebreakers, Carolina would be better because they have fewer overtime losses. If I remember, that's how the first tiebreaker goes, but I could be wrong about that. So for the purposes of this conversation, this is the year. We talked about this last week. All of those teams other than Tampa Bay, the Rangers should be able to beat in less than six games or less. I think that is really important for the Rangers to kind of shed that issue, not even that issue, shed that problem that has held them back from making long playoff runs. Get up on these teams, especially if you're playing Philly. If you are playing the Flyers in the first round, that needs to be a five-game series.
Yeah.
You need to beat the doors off, blow the doors off of them.
I totally agree with that. And like Tampa would be the worst case scenario only because that series would drain the Rangers. That would be a really difficult series to get through because Tampa is a really talented team. And yeah, they're not as good as they have been. And they've had some miserable losses and, you know, things like that. They're not as good as they were when they won Stanley Cup.
7-1-2 in their last 10.
But first of all, like you said, they're rolling, right? Like they look a lot better recently than they have for most of the season. They still have Vasilevsky. They still have Stamkos. They still have Hedman. They still have, you know, Kucherov. And Point, who decimated the Rangers in that last game. They still have a lot of top talent and they are a dangerous team to play, especially in the first round, especially early. That would be a really difficult matchup. Even if the Rangers do end up winning that, which I think they would, it would be a lot harder for them moving forward than if they play literally anybody else on that list that you said. A team like Philly, they should be able to beat in five. If they play the Islanders, they should beat them in five or less. Like if they play Detroit, they should be able to beat them in five and less. But a team like Tampa, with a lot of high end talent that could, you know, and will beat you if you let them, it's going to be a drainer. And that's the one team that I really hope the Rangers avoid early on. If you want to get to, like, if the Tampa Bay Lightning somehow get to later on and you play them later on when they're not, you know, when they're not 100%, at that point, I probably take the Rangers. But early on, it's like that's a series that could be a run killer if the Rangers let it be a run killer. And Tampa Bay has the ability to make it a run killer if they play like it. So that's kind of the one team that I really hope to avoid. But everybody else, like you said, it needs to be a really short series. And by all accounts, all the teams that you listed should be short series because the Rangers are just better than them.
Yeah. Evolving Wild thinks Carolina is going to win the division. And that's why the Rangers would be most likely to play the Flyers. The only thing, and they only play Tampa in the first round if they win the division and they have the better and they have the second best record. You know, if Florida has more points and the Rangers win the division, they would be playing Tampa Bay. Or vice, if the Bruins, same thing. You know, if the other division has more points, and right now the Rangers have the most points of anyone in the East, right now, as they sit, they would be playing the 79-point Capitals, which the Capitals stink. Just objectively, they are the best, worst team. That's what that last spot is.
That whole team is Charlie Lindgren. Charlie Lindgren has been fantastic for them. And Ovechkin, of course.
Ovechkin isn't even having a good season in all honesty.
He's been scoring a lot of goals lately.
Yeah, positive regression. I mean, the Capitals probably going to get in with like 88, 89 standings points, which would be the lowest in God knows how long. When I did last year, when I was doing something with the Flames because their math graded out weird. The lowest points since 2012 was 92 for any team to make the playoffs in a full season. You know, the 2020, 2013, those don't count. The other ones, 92.
Well, that's what happens when no one wants to win hockey games, Nick. I don't know if you know this, but every team that's like battling for that spot, they're all losing. All of them. No one wants to win a hockey game. It's insane. The Islanders just got shut out by the Devils. Like the Red Wings went on that long ass losing streak. There's
3-7 lately. And 10 in their last 10. Yeah.
No one wants it.
Washington, in all honesty,
spot. It's crazy.
Washington's 7-3-0 in their last 10. I mean, they're the only team that's showing signs of life recently. I think we can probably cut the Devils out of the mix. The Devils would basically need to win every game the rest of the way because that would put them at 84, and that still probably wouldn't be enough to get in. That would require everybody else in front of them losing pretty much all the rest of their games. The Islanders, I think, are probably the most likely of the teams that aren't in a playoff spot to be able to make a little bit of a run because Sorokin gets going, you get Barzal, Horvat going, you know. They've got the best star players of Washington.
Lee's probably going to get suspended for that hit, though.
Yeah,
which makes it tougher. Yeah, even though I understand like Islanders fans are not happy with Lee right now anyway.
Yeah.
Lee on your roster is still better than that same roster without Lee on it.
Yes.
So that's going to be a tough blow to them and their playoff run.
Yeah, they're in a weird spot. Detroit, Washington, the Islanders, the Devils, they all stink. Like, as somebody who's watched a decent chunk of all of them, other than Detroit, because just, God, that team's just not fun to watch. Watching Patrick Kane cherry pick like it's men's league, it's hilarious how I don't think I've seen him win a single puck battle in like the 5 or 6 Red Wings games I've
watched. Don't tell Red Wings fans that because they'll get mad at you.
I understand the difference between somebody who is a fan and somebody who puts the extra work in. Stats are nice. They are not the be-all end-all. I do not think Zach Hyman is a better hockey player than Artemi Panarin. I know Zach Hyman has 50 goals. He's not better than Artemi Panarin. That's the difference between understanding the counting stats and citing the counting stats. Last thing before we wrap up here on today's episode, they got 11 games to go. They're on pace to finish with 113 points. As far as comparing this regular season to the last President's Trophy team, the 13-14 team, the 11-12 team that came pretty close to winning the President's Trophy, and we talked about this last week, the week before, you know, there's a real argument this is the best salary cap era Rangers team, period. Like, no addendum, no additional notes needed.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I think the higher end talent on this team is better than 2014, but the depth is probably a little bit better on the 2014 team than on this team. If that
the
makes
cup
a
final
bit of sense.
Team or the
yes.
14-15.
Yeah.
Team?
Yeah. Okay. I mean the Brian Boyle, the Benoit Pouliots of that team. And you could make similar arguments that Wenberg is the Boyle and VC is the Pouliot. If you really want to go there, but like that team, while not as good up top, they were deep, man. They were such a deep team, and at that point you're splitting hairs, but like this team's a lot of fun. This current team is like, and again, I say this on Twitter, I say this on the show, like I don't want to say anything that could mess up the juju about this roster, but it's fun. They are having a lot of fun. The Chris Kreider, after the game against Saturday, when he put his glove on his stick and he made Rempe high five it up top, like that's fun. Like this team is having so much fun. Their vibes per 60 are through the roof, and something that we haven't seen in a long time from this roster. And yeah, I think obviously Panarin is better than anybody on the 2014 roster. Like this team has, and also on top of that, they have the avenues to do it. They're probably going to play a team in the first round that's not going to be great. They have the like they have all of the chances in front of them to make this a deep run. It just comes down to whether or not they're able to execute.
It's a fair question. It's one that it's hard to compare because the eras are different. Like, you know, the Rangers went like 10 years without a guy hitting 70 points. Like their leading point getter when they went to the cup final, I want to say it was Brad Richards, if I remember correctly.
Brad Richards also very like people hate on this man. And I never got it. I understand his contract was bad, but that's not on Brad Richards. Like blame Sather for that. Also, like all Richards had to do was sign the contract. Like I don't. People yell at him for the contract the same way. Like, you know, we yell, we nitpick Jacob Trouba because he's making $8 million. But I'm not blaming Trouba for signing it. Like, pay me $8 million a year.
Richards was making $7 million a year when the salary cap was like $41 million a year. So it's a little bit different than when they first came out of that lockout and there was no money to go around. And the first thing Glenn Sather did was give that to Richards and then trade for Rick Nash. And then there was no depth on the team because they were paying him, Gabrick, and Richards like a combined half of the salary cap. But that's enough relitigating the early 2010s. I do think there's an argument this is the best Rangers regular season team of the salary cap era, and they're going to have a chance to break the franchise record in points in a season. It's going to be close. 93-94 is 112. They're going to have a chance to break that mark. 14-15 was 113, and I'm not going back earlier than like 1990 in all honesty, because that's a different sport, but they're going to have a chance. You know, they've got 11 games to go. They're at 98. If they were to break the record, I want to say they need to win 7 of the final 11 games, which would give them 14, which would give them 112. So no, 8. They would need to win 8 of the final 11 to break their franchise record for points in a season. It's not impossible. They've got some easy games down the road. And I do think it was funny that Laviolette said, well, no, maybe we'll take it easy. I don't care if we lose one here or there. We don't really need the President's Trophy. I do think that's funny. And I'll end this on this note, because one of my friends brought this up on conversation on Saturday. We were watching the game. He's like, how often do teams that win the President's Trophy actually win the Stanley Cup? And it's like 12-13%, something like that, throughout the history of giving out the President's Trophy. That is better than your odds of winning the Stanley Cup when the season starts. So I know a lot of people talk President's Trophy curse, you know, not enough adversity in the regular season. The point is not that winning the President's Trophy curses your team. It's that it's fucking hard to win. It's hard to win 16 games, okay?
Yeah.
It is really hard to win 16 games in the playoffs, you know? That's not the right takeaway, that the President's Trophy is a curse. The takeaway is it's hard to win games.
It's not what you said, it's how you said it.
It's hard!
Really got me, holy.
You know, there's a reason they've only done this once since America entered World War II. It's hard! It's going to be hard. So buckle up and let's get nuts. At this point, what do you have to lose by being optimistic? If it blows up in your face, oh well, just like it did last year and the year before that and the year before that. At this point, I got nothing left in the negativity and the trying to be rational. At this point, Shesterkin's rolling. God willing, Zibanejad's going to go on a heater at some point in the next month. It's not. This is the year to do it. This is the year to do it. Anything else before we get out of here, Andrew?
By the way, that note to the fans was 4 years ago?
5 years ago.
5 years ago?
That was 2018.
Okay. So six years ago.
God.
So you're telling me that, you know, we're fans of a team that went from 6 years ago being like, okay, this is all going to be a long-term, you know, essentially a long-term rebuild. We're tearing it all down. This is going to take a while. Buckle up. Like, we're in for the long haul. Like, less than a decade later, the turnaround to, oh, this team could win the Stanley Cup here. Like, you know, we can relitigate all of the things that led to this point all we want. But at the end of the day, like, some teams are toiling in mediocrity for decades. The fact that the Rangers went from Stanley Cup contender to the note to, oh, hey, we're back to Stanley Cup contenders in not a very short amount of time is very cool and something that we should not take for granted.
Thank you, Adam Fox's dad. Yep. That'll do
and
it.
Panarin as well.
Panarin just wanted to live in a nice city. To quote Ethan, who wouldn't want to get paid $13 million a year to go to Nobu twice a week? It's a good deal, in all honesty. I agree. It's a really good deal.
Sure.
All right. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcast. Drop the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you are watching over on YouTube, hi, hello. These are our faces. Hit the subscribe button. Like the video. We'll see you guys real soon.
Later.